In the 1980s, a Honduran herbalist named Alfredo Bowman, known to the world as Dr. Sebi, claimed he had discovered a cure for AIDS cancer and dozens of chronic diseases. His message spread through celebrity circles and grassroots movements. He spoke of an alkaline plant-based diet that could balance the body's pH and eliminate disease. For years, he evaded legal crackdowns in the U.S., only to die mysteriously in a Honduran jail cell in 2016, officially from pneumonia. His followers whisper of suppression, of forces determined to keep his methods buried. They say truth is dangerous, so if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Man from Honduras. Long before his name became entangled with celebrity endorsements and conspiracy theories, Alfredo Darrington Bowman lived a quiet life in the lush green hills of Ilanga, Honduras. Born in 1933, he grew up without access to modern medicine. His grandmother, a local healer, used the roots, herbs, and plants of the jungle to treat ailments in their village. He watched her closely, absorbing lessons that would later shape his entire life. As a young man, Alfredo worked as a steam engineer, but he often suffered from chronic health issues, impotence, asthma, diabetes, and obesity among them. Western doctors prescribed medications, but he said they only made him worse. Disillusioned, he turned back to the natural world. In Mexico, he met a herbalist who introduced him to traditional African healing philosophies and encouraged him to fast, detox, and eat only foods native to the African diaspora. This was the beginning of his transformation. Alfredo Bowman changed his name to Dr. Sebi, a name he said honored ancestral wisdom. He was not a licensed medical doctor, but he began developing what he called the African Biomineral Balance, a strict diet of non-hybrid alkaline plant foods, herbs, and natural spring water. According to Sebi, disease could only survive in a mucus-rich, acidic environment. By eliminating processed foods, meat, dairy, and artificial chemicals, he believed the human body could heal itself from even the most aggressive illnesses. Word began to spread. By the early 1980s, Dr. Sebi had moved to New York City, where he opened the USHA Herbal Research Institute and began offering his herbal compounds and nutritional plan to the public. His approach was not subtle. He claimed he could cure AIDS. He said he had reversed cancer. He offered before and after testimonies, photos, and letters from patients. But to the medical establishment, these claims were outrageous, if not dangerous. In 1987, the state of New York charged Dr. Sebi with practicing medicine without a license. The lawsuit focused on advertisements where he claimed to cure diseases. Most expected him to fold under legal pressure, but Sebi surprised everyone. He defended himself in court and presented documentation from 77 people who claimed to be cured through his method. According to public court transcripts, the presiding judge accepted the testimonies, and Dr. Sebi won the case. Legally, he was found not guilty. The verdict sent shockwaves through communities that had long felt neglected by Western medicine, especially in Black and Caribbean circles. Here was a man who openly challenged pharmaceutical norms and walked away victorious. By the 1990s, Dr. Sebi had opened a healing village in Honduras, USHA Village, built around thermal waters and alkaline herbs. People from around the world came to detox, heal, and learn. Some stayed for weeks. Others returned annually. Among his clients were several high-profile names, Lisa Left Eye Lopes from TLC, who became one of his most vocal supporters. In her final interviews before her death in 2002, she spoke of how Sebi's regimen helped her find clarity and peace. But as his influence grew, so did the scrutiny. Mainstream doctors called him a fraud. They pointed out that he had no scientific studies, no clinical trials, and no peer-reviewed data. His remedies were not FDA-approved. his detractors warned that vulnerable patients were being lured away from evidence-based care by what they called false hope. Still, his supporters claimed the opposite. They saw a man being targeted for telling a truth too powerful for the system to accept. Dr. Sebi himself often said, "If the world doesn't know about your medicine, it's not because it doesn't work. It's because someone doesn't want them to know." By the early 2000s, the battle lines were clear. Dr. Sebi had become a polarizing figure, revered as a savior by some, ridiculed as a snake oil salesman by others. But nothing could prepare the public for what came next. In 2016, while traveling in Honduras, Dr. Sebi was arrested for allegedly carrying large amounts of cash, over $37,000, without properly declaring it. He was taken into custody and, weeks later, died in jail from complications reportedly related to pneumonia. He was 82 years old. His sudden death under circumstances that many found suspicious only deepened the mystery surrounding his life. Rumors erupted across the internet. Some believed he was silenced for his knowledge. Others suspected foul play by government forces or pharmaceutical interests. No evidence ever confirmed these theories. But once a seed of doubt is planted in the public's mind, it rarely dies. Today, Dr. Sebi is more myth than man. His family and followers continue his work, selling herbal supplements and promoting the alkaline lifestyle. His name trends every year, especially when new celebrities like Nipsey Hussle and Nick Cannon revive his story. His healing village still welcomes guests. His teachings, though unverified by science, have found a new generation of believers. Dr. Sebi claimed to offer natural answers in an unnatural world. Whether genius or misguided, he remains one of the most controversial figures in modern alternative medicine. And this is only the beginning of the journey. Chapter 2. The Lawsuit That Shocked the System. By 1987, Dr. Sebi was no longer a fringe figure operating quietly out of a Brooklyn apartment. He had become a rising voice in the alternative medicine world, thanks in large part to his bold claims. In local radio ads, newspaper spreads, and public forums, he said he could cure AIDS, lupus, herpes, cancer, and more. He didn't hint. He stated it outright. He invited people to see for themselves. But the New York State Attorney General's office wasn't impressed. That year, Dr. Sebi was arrested and charged with practicing medicine without a license and making fraudulent health claims. According to prosecutors, he was misleading the public by advertising that he could cure diseases without any scientific proof. He had no medical degree. His herbal remedies were not approved by the Food and Drug Administration. To the authorities, it was simple. He was breaking the law and endangering lives. But what followed was anything but simple. The courtroom was packed when the trial began. Community members, former patients, and activists filled the benches. Supporters called it a modern-day witch hunt, a system trying to silence a black man who dared to challenge Western norms. Opponents argued the state had a duty to protect the public from dangerous pseudoscience. The stakes were high. Dr. Sebi defended himself. In the courtroom, he was calm, articulate, and unwavering. He argued that he never prescribed drugs or performed surgeries. Instead, he offered nutritional guidance and herbal compounds made from plants and minerals sourced from the Americas, Africa, and the Caribbean. But his strongest weapon wasn't philosophy. It was proof. Dr. Sebi presented over 70 affidavits from patients who claimed to have been cured by his methods. People testified in court, some with medical documentation, others with powerful personal stories. One woman spoke of reversing lupus symptoms. Another man described recovering from prostate cancer. Most compelling were several patients who said they were HIV positive and later tested negative. After following Sebi's strict diet and taking his compounds, it wasn't a scientific study, it wasn't peer-reviewed, but it was human testimony, and it made an impact. The presiding judge asked a key question. Did Dr. Sebi claim to cure, and did the people he treated believe themselves cured? When the evidence aligned with Sebi's claims and the testimonies appeared authentic, the court ruled in his favor. He was found not guilty on the charge of practicing medicine without a license. The decision was seismic. In black and immigrant communities especially, it felt like a victory against the medical-industrial complex. Many had long distrusted hospitals and pharmaceutical companies. Generations had passed down stories of forced sterilizations, medical neglect, and experiments. Here was a man offering a different path, one rooted in natural healing, African traditions, and self-reliance. And the system had just validated his right to exist. But the verdict didn't mean the end of criticism. Far from it. Medical experts and skeptics quickly pushed back. They warned the public not to confuse courtroom strategy with medical proof. Winning a legal case, they said, didn't mean Dr. Sebi's methods actually cured disease. It simply meant he hadn't violated the letter of the law. Still, the trial made him a hero. Across urban radio stations, in community centers, and later online forums, people began sharing Sebi's food list, herbal protocols, and detox routines. Some found it extreme. No animal products, no alcohol, no hybrid fruits like seedless grapes or bananas. But others embraced it fully, treating it as a spiritual path, as much as a dietary one. It wasn't just the herbal compounds. Sebi taught that the root of disease was mucus buildup caused by an acidic internal environment. Alkalinity, he said, was the key to health. Western doctors called this idea simplistic at best, misleading at worst. But to thousands, it made sense. People weren't just seeking cures. They were seeking control over their bodies, their health, and their futures. His brand grew. Dr. Sebi opened USHA Herbal Research Institute in New York and later established a retreat center in Honduras. He sold a range of herbal products with names like Banju, Viento, and Bromide Plus. He hosted lectures and invited people to reconnect with nature. He often said, "There's only one disease, mucus. Remove the mucus, and you remove the disease." But there was another side to his growing popularity. As word spread, so did the scrutiny. Medical watchdog groups, journalists, and science advocates began examining his work more closely. They pointed out the lack of published data, the absence of double-blind trials, and the anecdotal nature of his results. Some questioned whether he was giving false hope to people in vulnerable states. Still, the demand for his treatments continued to rise. Celebrities began to take notice. One of the most prominent was Lisa Left Eye Lopes, the beloved member of the R&B group TLC. In interviews and documentaries, she spoke passionately about her time at Dr. Sebi's village in Honduras. She described undergoing a deep cleanse, meditating in nature, and finding clarity. She credited Sebi with transforming her physical and mental health. Her endorsement drew new attention to Sebi's work. But tragedy followed when Lopez died in a car accident in Honduras in 2002. Conspiracy theories began to swirl even then, with some believing her alignment with Dr. Sebi put her at risk. Years later, other celebrities like Nipsey Hussle reignited interest in Sebi's work. Hussle had planned to produce a documentary on Sebi's life and death. When Hussle was murdered in 2019, some fans suspected a deeper plot linking his death to the same forces they believed silenced Sebi. Again, no evidence supported these claims, but the myth grew stronger than the facts. Still, none of it would have been possible without the outcome of that 1987 case. Winning that lawsuit gave Dr. Sebi legitimacy in the eyes of the public. It made his name a symbol of resistance against disease, against institutions, and against systems perceived to value profit over people. But legitimacy in court doesn't shield you from controversy, and as the years went on, Sebi's name would be dragged into lawsuits, product investigations, and international headlines. Yet through it all, one thing remained, his loyal following. For them, he wasn't just a healer, he was a prophet, and prophets, history shows, rarely die quietly. Chapter 3. The Village of Healing. Tucked away in the foothills outside La Ceiba, Honduras, surrounded by wild jungle and the distant hum of Caribbean waves, sits a place known to some as Sacred Ground, USHA Village. To outsiders, it looks like a quiet wellness retreat, rows of modest cabins, thermal spring pools bubbling with steam, winding paths lined with fruit trees and herbs. But to Dr. Sebi's followers, it is something far more powerful, a sanctuary, a laboratory, a spiritual command center for natural healing. After his legal victory in New York, Dr. Sebi turned his energy to building something permanent. He wanted a place where people could disconnect from the toxins of modern life, not just physically, but mentally and spiritually. The location was no accident. The natural hot springs on the property, rich in minerals and sulfur, had been used for generations by locals to treat skin infections, joint pain, and inflammation. Dr. Sebi believed these waters were essential to restoring what he called the electrical balance of the body. At USHA Village, healing began the moment you arrived. Guests were instructed to leave behind processed food, chemical-based toiletries, and even cell phones. The air smelled of herbs and earth. Every meal was cooked using only ingredients from Dr. Sebi's approved nutritional guide: wild rice, amaranth, sea moss, mushrooms, raw vegetables, and spring water drawn directly from the mountain. No sugar, no starch, no animal products, no exceptions. The village was both clinic and monastery. Each visitor was assigned a regimen of herbal tonics, blends designed to cleanse the liver, restore the nervous system, flush out mucus, and balance cellular energy. Names like chelation, biofaro, Ava Salve, and Fucus were common. Everything was rooted in the belief that the body, when free from toxins and nourished with electric foods, could repair itself fully. It wasn't just about illness. It was about resetting life. Guests woke with the sun and followed a strict rhythm: herbal doses at dawn, meditation near the springs, meals in silence, detox baths, and time to rest. Some stayed for a week, others stayed for months. Many came with chronic conditions: diabetes, fibroids, lupus, high blood pressure, HIV. Some came for clarity, seeking to break addiction or heal from trauma. Some just came to see if the legend was true. The testimonials were often emotional. A woman from Miami said she came to Honduras in a wheelchair and left walking on her own. A man from Jamaica swore his blood pressure normalized after 2 weeks. A young couple claimed they conceived their first child naturally after years of infertility. Skeptics brushed these stories off as placebo or exaggeration. But the people who lived them didn't care about science journals. They cared about feeling better. And they did. At the center of it all was Dr. Sebi. He moved through the village like a priest and a father figure. He wore long robes or simple linen clothes, often barefoot. His presence was magnetic, soft-spoken, sharp-witted, and unwavering in his beliefs. He spoke of food as medicine and the body as an electric machine. He rejected man-made vitamins, synthetic drugs, and anything outside nature's design. "If God didn't make it, don't take it," he'd say. But he also challenged his guests to look inward. "You cannot heal in the same environment that made you sick," he once told a group. "You must change not only what you eat, but what you believe, what you fear, what you accept." For some, it was the first time anyone had spoken to them with that level of intensity and care. He didn't treat symptoms. He challenged lifestyles. That's why followers didn't just visit USHA. They converted to its philosophy. Of course, not everyone walked away healed. There were people who felt no change, who grew frustrated with the strict rules or left early, but most who came to USHA returned home with stories they believed in, and for many, that belief itself became part of the cure. By the mid-2000s, USHA Village had become a global word-of-mouth destination. No major advertising, no press tours, just one person telling another, "You have to go." Celebrities came quietly, models, rappers, athletes, even politicians. But it was Lisa Left Eye Lopes who made the biggest public impact. In the early 2000s, Lopes visited Uesha multiple times. In interviews and footage later shared in her VH1 documentary, she described feeling reborn there. "Your mind clears up," she said. "You start to hear things differently. Your body responds in a way that's natural. It's like waking up from a long sleep." She had planned to fund wellness centers based on Sebi's teachings in the United States. But before she could, she died in a car accident in Honduras in 2002, just miles from USHA Village. Some called it a tragic coincidence. Others believed it was another example of a truth-teller taken too soon. USHA became hallowed ground after that. Even after Dr. Sebi's death in 2016, the village continued to operate under the guidance of his children and longtime followers. They maintained the gardens, the protocols, the hot springs. They insisted the work wasn't done, that nature doesn't die when a man does. But the world outside the village kept asking questions. Doctors and scientists demanded data, trials, peer-reviewed evidence. How did his herbs work? What were their molecular compositions? Where were the long-term studies? They accused Sebi of offering hope without proof, of blurring the line between healing and belief. But inside the gates of USHI, belief was part of the medicine. And for those who had seen their lives transformed, even if the science couldn't explain it, the proof was already in their bodies. Still, one question lingered. If this place held the power to heal, why did the world try so hard to ignore it? Chapter 4, Enemies of the State or Enemies of Truth? By the mid-2000s, Dr. Sebi was no longer just a healer. He had become a symbol, a man who claimed to stand against an entire system. His message had traveled far beyond the villages of Honduras and the courtrooms of New York. It was now echoing through neighborhoods, barbershops, social media, and underground wellness circles from Atlanta to Accra. But symbols, especially powerful ones, often come under fire. To his followers, Dr. Sebi was a revolutionary. He dared to tell people that their sickness wasn't a curse, but a consequence of what they ate and what they were told. That healing didn't require a prescription pad, only discipline, herbs, and belief. He rejected the language of disease management and instead preached total restoration. To his critics, however, he was dangerous. The medical world was especially vocal. Professional bodies and pharmaceutical representatives warned that promoting unproven cures to desperate people was not just irresponsible, it was potentially lethal. AIDS, cancer, diabetes, these were not things to play with. Offering herbal mixtures without controlled studies or verified ingredients, they argued, crossed the line from hope to harm. But Sebi never backed down. In public talks, he confronted Western medicine directly. He often said, "They've never cured anything. Not the common cold, not diabetes, not AIDS. Yet they call themselves the experts." And then he would smile, calm but defiant. "They have studied the white man's disease, I study the black man's nature." That line, whether spiritual, cultural, or literal, was at the heart of his controversy. Dr. Sebi wasn't just challenging medical science, he was challenging the worldview behind it. He believed that the diseases plaguing black and indigenous populations were not being properly understood because Western science ignored the ancestral dietary needs and chemical makeup of their bodies. This claim electrified many and enraged others. His critics demanded scientific validation. Where were the randomized trials? Where was the molecular breakdown of his herbs? How could he justify diagnosing someone without lab tests or recommending herbs for HIV with no published data? Sebi responded with a simple question. "Why are you asking me for proof now? I went to court in New York and proved it then, and you didn't believe it then either." It wasn't just doctors he clashed with. Pharmaceutical companies began to take notice, As his remedies gained popularity, they cut into markets dominated by cholesterol pills, diabetes medications, and antidepressants. His products weren't sold in pharmacies, but they were flying off the shelves in certain communities. That made him a business threat. More than once, his herbal products were investigated by the FDA for mislabeling or unapproved medical claims. In several states, distributors were forced to pull items from shelves. Customs seized herbal shipments. Banks flagged his accounts. Even PayPal froze transactions linked to his store. Followers saw it as a campaign to silence a man who was simply telling the truth. But to agencies enforcing public health policy, it was standard procedure. No one, they said, was above the law. This tug of war between SEBI and the system became even more public when celebrities got involved. Lisa Left Eye Lopes had already brought him into the spotlight before her death. But in the years that followed, other entertainers, especially in hip-hop, began spreading his name again. Erykah Badu mentioned his philosophy. Styles P opened juice bars based on alkaline diets. Even the late rapper Nipsey Hussle, a vocal advocate for health in black communities, spoke in interviews about producing a documentary on Dr. SEBI. He said he wanted to tell the truth before they try to erase it. That statement turned into a rallying cry, especially when, in 2019, Nipsey Hussle was murdered outside his Los Angeles clothing store. Almost instantly, conspiracy theories exploded online. People connected the dots. Nipsey spoke of SEBI. Nipsey was killed. Dr. SEBI had died in a Honduran jail just 3 years earlier under mysterious circumstances. What were the odds? Was it all just coincidence? Or were powerful forces trying to suppress something bigger? There was no evidence to support foul play in either death. But the timeline felt suspicious to many. Suspicion turned to storytelling. Storytelling turned to myth. And myths, true or not, carry more power than most facts. Nick Cannon, another celebrity with ties to SEBI's teachings, pledged to continue Nipsey's documentary project. When asked why, he said, "The real truth is what people are afraid of." But again, the medical community pushed back. They warned that mythologizing SEBI could lead people to reject life-saving treatments, that glorifying his narrative without evidence was irresponsible, that while some herbs had genuine healing properties, claims of curing AIDS or cancer needed to be held to rigorous standards, and that without proper testing, even natural compounds could cause harm. Yet every time a headline accused SEBI of being a quack, thousands came to his defense. They didn't see him as a fraud. They saw him as a man who dared to speak what others wouldn't. A man who taught people to listen to their bodies, question authority, and return to nature. A man who made people feel powerful again. In his speeches, Dr. SEBI often said, "They can call me crazy all they want, but look around you. This system has never been sane." He called doctors licensed drug dealers. He called sugar white death. He called processed food poison in disguise. And every time he said it, someone in the crowd would nod and whisper, "That's the truth." Truth, that was the word that kept coming up. But whose truth? Science's, SEBI's, the public's? Depending on who you asked, Dr. SEBI was either saving lives or endangering them. But what no one could deny was this: he had become too big to ignore. Chapter 5. The Final Days. Arrest and Death in Honduras. August 6, 2016. The news came quietly at first, then spread like wildfire. Dr. SEBI was dead. He had died in a Honduran jail cell, far from the herbal gardens of Ueshia Village and the stages where he once preached natural healing to thousands. The official report said pneumonia, complications. He was 82 years old. But for many who followed his work, something didn't feel right. How could a man who built an entire philosophy around health die in jail without treatment from something as common and preventable as pneumonia? The questions began to build, but to understand the suspicion, we need to go back just a few months earlier, to May 28th, 2016. That day, Dr. Sebi was traveling with a business associate through the port city of Tela, Honduras. Reports say he was carrying over $37,000 in cash. In the U.S., it would have been a routine financial declaration, but in Honduras, transporting large sums of undeclared cash raised red flags. Authorities arrested him on suspicion of money laundering. At first, it seemed like a misunderstanding. Sebi had been known to travel with cash before, often for herbal shipments or clinic business. He explained his intentions and bail was reportedly arranged, but before he could be released, another layer of legal confusion surfaced. He was detained again, this time by federal authorities in Honduras, and transferred to a larger facility in the city of La Ceiba. That's where things began to unravel. The jail in La Ceiba was overcrowded, under-resourced, and plagued with health and sanitation issues. It was a place not fit for anyone, let alone an elderly man with a strict health regimen. Inmates reported that he was held for weeks without proper access to his herbal treatments, food, or clean water. He began to lose weight. He developed a cough, then a fever. Eventually, he was taken to a nearby hospital. By then, he was severely weakened. The hospital confirmed he was suffering from pneumonia. Days later, he was dead. To the authorities, it was an unfortunate but explainable death. A man of advanced age, caught in legal limbo, succumbing to a common illness. But to his family and followers, the circumstances were suspicious, too sudden, too poorly managed, too convenient. Why was he detained for so long without trial? Why wasn't bail honored, despite payment? Why wasn't he transferred to a medical facility sooner? Why was there so little media coverage until after his death? No clear answers were ever given. And when clarity is missing, speculation rushes in to fill the void. Almost immediately, conspiracy theories ignited across the internet. Some believed he had been deliberately silenced, taken out by the same system he'd spent his life challenging. Others saw it as a warning. Speak too loudly, help too many people, and they'll come for you. His death was compared to other figures who died under mysterious circumstances after threatening the status quo: Fred Hampton, Bob Marley, even Michael Jackson. There was no autopsy made public, no third-party investigation, no documentation that could satisfy the doubt. And so, for many, the truth of Dr. Sebi's death remains an open wound, too quiet to feel natural, too convenient to feel accidental. His daughter, Sama Bowman, spoke emotionally about those final weeks. She said the family tried to intervene, to arrange a release, to get him care. But the system moved slowly. Calls went unanswered. Paperwork stalled. And when they finally arrived at the jail, it was already too late. But Dr. Sebi's death didn't kill the movement. It magnified it. In fact, his passing gave new life to his message. Documentaries, interviews, and social media posts spread the word to people who had never heard his name before. USHA Village received a spike in visitors. Online sales of his herbal compounds surged. For every skeptic, there seemed to be three new believers. To them, Dr. Sebi hadn't died. He had been martyred. It wasn't about whether every claim he made could be scientifically proven. It was about what he represented. A man of color from humble roots, standing firm against one of the most powerful industries in the world. A man who told people they had control over their bodies. A man who refused to play by the rules of a system that had ignored, experimented on, or abandoned their communities for generations. In the weeks after his death, murals of Sebi appeared in cities across the U.S. His face, long beard, warm eyes, slender frame, became a symbol of wellness and resistance. Health influencers began quoting him. Artists sampled his interviews in their songs. People who once laughed at his ideas were now reading his guides, drinking sea moss, and talking about alkaline diets. But beyond the spotlight, his family mourned a real loss. To them, he wasn't a myth. He was a father, a teacher, a man who dedicated his life to something he believed in, He had flaws. He made mistakes. But he stood for something. And he never stopped speaking. His memorial was held in Honduras, quiet, spiritual, full of herbs and prayer. There were no press cameras, no headlines, no official apology from the government that had detained him, just a circle of people who believed he was sent here with a purpose, to awaken. And in many ways, he had. Whether people called him a fraud or a visionary, one fact remained. He had planted seeds. Seeds that continued to grow after his death, some rooted in fact, others in faith, all fed by a desire for something better than what the world had been offering. Because when people feel unseen by modern systems, they look for healing in ancient ones. And in the life and death of Dr. Sebi, many found something worth believing in, even if the truth was still tangled in mystery. Chapter 6, The Revival. Nipsey Hussle, Nick Cannon, and the Rebirth of a Movement. In the years following Dr. Sebi's death, his name could have easily faded into the fringe corners of the wellness world, remembered only by a tight circle of herbalists and old followers. But instead, something unexpected happened. His message began to spread faster than it ever had while he was alive. And it all started with a voice from South Los Angeles. Nipsey Hussle, born Ermias Asgadam, was not only a rapper, but a community builder. He spoke openly about ownership, generational wealth, and black empowerment. He wasn't flashy, he was strategic. And sometime around 2017, in interviews and tweets, Nipsey began to mention Dr. Sebi. "I'm working on doing a documentary on Dr. Sebi," he said during a widely circulated radio interview. "He went to trial in New York and beat the case because he proved in court he cured AIDS. Left Eye died after visiting him, so I'm going to do the story." The reaction was immediate. For many who had never heard of Dr. Sebi, Nipsey's interest sparked curiosity. Who was this herbalist that mainstream media had ignored? What was this trial that no one had taught in school? Why had no one documented this before? The ripple effect was powerful. Young fans started researching the African biomineral balance. They posted screenshots of Dr. Sebi's food list. They began drinking sea moss, giving up meat, avoiding processed sugar. Sebi said no starch became a slogan in online circles. But then tragedy struck. On March 31, 2019, Nipsey Hussle was shot and killed outside his Marathon clothing store in Crenshaw. He was 33 years old. The news stunned the world. Fans mourned, communities wept, and conspiracy theories ignited like wildfire. Was it gang violence, personal beef, or something deeper? To many in the Dr. Sebi community, the timing felt too familiar. Just like Lisa Left Eye Lopes, who had aligned herself with Dr. Sebi and died in Honduras, Nipsey, too, had publicly championed the healer. And now he was gone, just as he was preparing to expose the world to Sebi's story. The Internet erupted with speculation. Tweets declared, "They don't want this documentary out." YouTube videos claimed the government or Big Pharma was behind Nipsey's death. Memes connected dots that weren't backed by evidence, but made emotional sense to people who already believed the system was built to silence truth-tellers. There was no proof. The man arrested for Nipsey's murder was known to him. But by then it didn't matter. The myth had returned, louder, more widespread, and now anchored by yet another fallen voice. In the days that followed, actor and producer Nick Cannon stepped in. "I'm picking up the baton," he said. "We're going to continue the work." He promised to finish the documentary Nipsey had planned. He traveled to Honduras, visited USHA Village, spoke with Sebi's family, and began laying the foundation for what he said would be a powerful tribute. For a while, momentum surged. Interest in Dr. Sebi exploded. Google searches spiked. News outlets reluctantly started covering the story. Wellness influencers promoted alkaline diets. Celebrities like YG, Lauren London, and others began sharing more about Sebi's teachings. Even mainstream brands started referencing herbal supplements that sounded suspiciously like Sebi's formulas. But something else began to shift too. So did the scrutiny. Scientists and medical professionals began pushing back harder than ever. Articles were published warning against misinformation. They pointed out that no credible evidence exists proving Sebi cured AIDS or cancer. They called it dangerous to suggest people with serious illnesses could rely on diet alone without medical treatment. Fact-checkers dissected every viral claim. Yes, Sebi won his 1988 court case, but it was based on testimonial evidence, not medical studies. No, there is no official documentation proving he cured diseases as claimed. Yes, the FDA had warned against his products and pursued legal action over the years. No, there is no confirmed link between his death and foul play. But for his followers, the facts were only part of the story. What they saw was a pattern. A man from a poor black background challenges the medical industry. He gains attention, builds momentum, then dies suddenly. Then another man, Nipsey, tries to tell his story and dies too. The logic didn't come from science. It came from lived experience, a history of distrust, and a deep belief that systems don't always protect the truth. Dr. Sebi's teachings became more than a health guide. They became a form of rebellion, a stand against a world that, to many, had failed them. Meanwhile, Nick Cannon continued to work behind the scenes. But then, in 2020, he too came under public fire, this time for making controversial remarks in an unrelated podcast episode. The backlash was swift, deals were pulled, and attention shifted. The documentary project lost visibility, though Cannon insisted it was still in motion. Despite delays, the movement didn't stop. Sebi-inspired juice bars opened in major cities. Instagram influencers launched detox challenges. Caribbean herbalists and African practitioners began referencing his protocols again. People organized alkaline retreats. On TikTok, young creators began breaking down Sebi's food list, often blending it with modern veganism and spiritual wellness. And Usha Village? It remained open, quiet, steady, still drawing pilgrims who wanted to walk where Sebi walked and drink from the spring where he believed healing began. At its core, the revival wasn't just about medicine. It was about memory, about honoring voices that were often erased or dismissed, about reclaiming the idea that people of African descent had ancient knowledge that didn't need a white lab coat to be valid. Whether you agreed with Sebi's methods or not, his movement reminded the world of something deeper. That healing isn't always found in a prescription. It's sometimes found in the stories people are told and the ones they choose to believe. Chapter 7. Legacy or Legend? Years after his death, Dr. Sebi's name still sparks debate in doctors' offices, kitchens, podcasts, and courtrooms. He's been called many things: healer, fraud, prophet, con man, teacher, threat. But one thing is certain: his legacy refuses to fade. For some, he was simply a gifted herbalist, a man with an intuitive grasp of nature's power who helped people feel better using plants, minerals, and belief. For others, he was a revolutionary voice who confronted racism in medicine, exposed the pharmaceutical industry's profit-driven machine, and gave people the courage to take back their health. But for his critics, he was dangerous. Even now, medical professionals warn against the spread of pseudoscience. They argue that many of Sebi's claims remain unproven and that encouraging people to treat serious illnesses like HIV or cancer solely through herbs or diet can delay or prevent life-saving treatment. They remind us that no peer-reviewed studies have validated his so-called cures. And while anecdotal healing is powerful, it cannot replace clinical evidence. Still, that argument misses something critical. Because for many of Sebi's followers, it was never just about science. It was about trust. The modern medical system, to them, had failed, offering pills without answers, ignoring the role of food, and treating symptoms instead of people. Dr. Sebi didn't offer white coats or sterile offices. He offered attention, simplicity, hope. And that hope, for better or worse, became his most potent medicine. His followers remain loyal. His family continues to operate USA Village and produce herbal formulas. Influencers on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube share recipes using his principles. Sebi said no starch is still trending. There are now alkaline cookbooks, Sebi-inspired health coaches, and detox packages sold around the world. Some of these are endorsed by his children, others not at all. His legacy has become a brand, and like all powerful brands, it comes with a cost. There are now dozens of companies using his name, selling products that vary wildly in quality and content. Lawsuits have been filed. Trademark battles have erupted. Even his family members have disagreed publicly over who should carry the torch. In many ways, the legacy has fractured, stretched thin between profit and principle. And yet, the legend has only grown. Some see him as a visionary lost too soon. Others believe he was a man who oversimplified complex diseases. Some think he was wrong, but meant well. Others believe he knew exactly what he was doing and was silenced because of it. The truth may live somewhere in between. But here's what can't be denied. Dr. Sebi made people question things they were never taught to question. He challenged institutions. He revived ancient wisdom. He made people believe that healing was possible, not just through pills, but through plants, water, sunlight, and discipline. And belief, whether rooted in science or not, changes lives. There are still thousands of people today who credit him with reversing their illnesses, helping them lose weight, find mental clarity, or break free from addiction. Even if only some of those stories are medically verifiable, the impact is real. And in the space where medicine and faith collide, real lives are changed. So, was Dr. Sebi a genius or a misguided healer? Was he ahead of his time or dangerously naive? Was he silenced, or did his body simply give out? In the end, those questions might matter less than what he stirred in people. The fire to look inward, the courage to try something different, the reminder that the body, in many ways, is its own medicine. Today, his face lives on in murals, his voice echoes in songs, his teachings are debated in classrooms and community centers alike. The seeds he planted about food, healing, and empowerment, continue to grow, whether in gardens, minds, or movements. Maybe that was his greatest cure after all. Not a treatment, but a transformation.